Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. I had a thought. The last time we chatted, and whenever I say that to Diane, if I say it, I was thinking, she goes, does it hurt much? But the idea is that, you know, a good part of Ascendo is about professional development. We have articles and
right.
essays and podcasts and all kinds of material that is intended to help people think different about something or learn something or reinforce something they already knew. It's by design. That's what we do on the site. One of the things, though, we have some courses that have a whole theme to them, and then you take you from the basics to working through the details of the next step and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't have, and we have books. I'm trying to think of all the different ways we have. We got videos, we got articles, and got books, got webinars, we've got courses. We don't. Every now and then, we hear about a conference or in-person course, and we list those on the calendars. Not every so often, it's like every day we're listing stuff.
Right.
And one of the things is that we have so many options. And my hypothesis is because different people learn different ways. I mean, I love reading a book on a topic. That's my go-to. I go to the library. That's where I go to learn. And and I heard this the other day is that, it was in the American population, and this was in general for all reading, have the book sales of all genres is overall down to something like 30% of what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, right. Because you get it online.
We get it online
or
we watch the video or we watch a quick YouTube thing or a TikTok or whatever. And they're saying the literacy rate, you know, and the ability to read and to write clearly is suffering because of that. One of the best ways to learn how to write is to read good writing. Right. And so if you're not reading, you don't have a lot of resources to draw on and to be able to write a clear report or a summary of something or a proposal. And that was the gist of the survey is, you know, we're kind of losing this part. And but that was part, my overall thought was, you know, we're kind of going after lots of different ways people can learn reliability type stuff. And we have lots of options and you can go find what way of learning you like versus the topic. And you can probably find a match in there somewhere. But I don't know. I'm just curious, what is a good way to really master a subject if you really want to learn it?
Well, I'd say, you know, like you say, I start out with some literature and, of course, listen to our podcast is a good way. Or all the podcasts on Ascendo Reliability, because it gives a very large distribution of views and both before market, pre-market, like you and I, I'm mostly focused on that, and as well as ongoing, maintenance
of equipment,
and factories, keeping factories running. So it's a very broad field of what you can learn. I think that, you know, it's as a consultant, we've learned so many different things that probably have never seen in our employment,
because we're going from one industry to another,
to another, wide variety of industries, wide variety of problems. But I think you get the basics of understanding of material science, if whatever field you're in, if it's mechanics, and you got to know about oils and lubricants and gears and metals and different things there.
Clearances,
so
alignment.
Clearances, tolerances. You should know about vibration and shock and those things. And that's kind of, you know, baseline. But of course, I'm very much a hands-on guy. That's why I'll tear apart whatever I have at home that's broken just to see if I can understand how it failed and maybe I can repair it.
Well, we've talked about it. I don't know how many podcasts. You and your wife with blenders. Yeah. And the issue is that
they're not meant to be repairable.
Your freezer has gotten way too hard ice in it, or your water content makes really hard ice or something.
Right.
It must be off the scale and the hardness.
Right.
It's on a Rockwell scale instead of something else.
Right, right. It could be, or it could be that they just thought a lower power motor would do the trick, you know, and they're not meant to be repaired or diagnosed.
No,
from taking them apart.
But the idea is that, you know, that's one way I didn't list on Ascendo is, you know, you learn by doing stuff and seeing things and analyzing and asking questions and stuff like that.
Getting down on the floor, going to the people on the line and saying, what have you seen? You know, where
what's working, what's not,
what's failed, and final tests, because that's usually whatever that mechanism is. A few got out and they're in the field.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm always just a real hands-on guy. And then once you find the mechanism, kind of study it a little further, by looking up, you know, tin whiskers, you notice a short.
There's literature on it. You see
a trace that's corroded, and then you go back and find out that your hands have some acid on them, whatever.
Yeah.
So
it'd be hard.
Or they didn't clean it, and you know they put a conformal coating on it that trapped contaminants,
and you got all those pretty little growing creatures underneath.
Exactly.
It.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's just, again,
but it's learning anything. Let's use HALT as an example. We talked about failure analysis last time, but let's say you're trying to learn HALT. You could buy your book. That'd be a place to start, but it's too long. Don't read is kind of the phenomena that this survey was doing. It's like, if it's more than 2-3 sentences, you know, if it's not a TikTok 60-second video, it's too long. I'm not going to deal with it.
Right, right.
And
short attention span.
Well, there's short attention span, but you have all these options where if I go here and I get a 2-minute video that covers it, then why do I need to read the book kind of thing? There's trade-offs, obviously. I think you and I would recognize that. Yet it's for example, I have a chainsaw and the shutoff switch wasn't working. So I had to figure out another way. I took the cowling off and said, I see what the problem is. The it's a really cheap design for how they did it. But if there's a little wire or a ribbon of metal with a curl at the end of it that under some conditions, it gets trapped in the on position. Uh-huh. And so the way it shuts the chainsaw off is that you push the lever to off and it moves that wire flap to where it shorts out your spark plug, basically.
Yeah, right. That's why the engine, right.
Right. But if it's trapped and it won't move up there, then you just have to wait till the gas runs out. Or what I did is I saw it while it was running and I moved it up there.
Yeah.
Shorted it. But the idea is like, well, how do I fix this? What's it supposed to look like when it's right? Because the first time I actually examined that thing is like when it was in the bad position. I said, well, this isn't working, so it must have to be somewhere else. So let me go watch a video on it. And I found out that on YouTube, if you don't have a subscription and you watch more than one video, then you start getting ads all the way through it. It's really annoying.
Right.
So I went and watched one video and got a good idea on it. And I was like, I went back, looked at my chainsaw. I was like, I got to watch that again. And so I waited a day and I didn't get any ads. So I got to watch it again. But eventually I figured out where it was supposed to go and why it was failing and fixed it.
Right.
But I didn't need to read the manual or the book or call customer service or do all that
other
stuff.
No, and that's what's great about the internet and what we our new information age is now. The first thing I do, if I can't figure out, you know, where's the air filter, you know, how do I open in my car? Because that's sometimes a mystery. I go to YouTube and I look at, I put in that search term and it'll be a video.
10 different people,
right? Because they're all, a lot of them are making good money off the streaming of YouTube videos. They get paid, depending on how many views they get.
Subscribers they get, yeah.
And so, and it's been excellent. And I, you know, look at a couple of them because, you know, may not be my exact model of dishwasher or, you know, data vehicle, right? Something like that, right? But I, but that's a really great information source that's new to us because we can see it. You know, the guy will go in with a camera and go down to the part and show you where the screws are, where the latches are, and things like that. So it's, I mean, that's my go-to right now. And the other thing is, a lot of that information's out there. It may not be correct. I, you know, you talk about published things, and of course, people are still using different prediction handbooks, and it's because they're, you know, they're published.
Yeah, they're still wrong. Yeah, there's all kinds
and it's
of
so
wrong
misleading. Yeah, so
well,
there's
the
a lot of
PDF is and, still out there too. So
what's that?
The MPDF is still out there.
Again, very misleading, very wrong, and it's just, you know, it's just been so embedded.
Well, part of the idea of training type stuff is, you know, if I needed to go pick something and I say, all right, it's this model from this vendor, from this brand, and this is the symptom, there's probably a dozen or more videos on YouTube or on Google we could find that say, this is the problem. Here's how you know it's a problem. Here's how you fix it, which is great. It took me 10 minutes.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah, if I'm trying to learn how to balance a fan and get the right airflow to for the system and what's the size of the openings on the other end, and I know it's going to get debris and dust in it, how do I account for that?
Right.
All those things. There's probably not a video on how to design that system.
No.
For your system, right?
No.
You haven't designed it yet. It's not in the...
No.
And then when it gets out there, nobody's going to create a video about how you designed it.
You know? No, but you can ask ChatGTP. You can ask some of them.
Resource.
And, well, you'd be surprised, yes. I think you have to know a little bit about the field that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But I see most of the information, most of what I've asked the ChatGTP come up with. If it has anything to do with reliability, for the most part, it's fairly reasonable and accurate. There might be a few things in there, but I find that it will give like test plans. It'll give basic outlines that are pretty decent. It'll give a failure analysis, potential failure analysis causes, depending on what you put in, and it all really is a matter of what you put in and how you ask the question. And I just, you know, I find it incredible that I can understand, you know, the impact of electromigration, and it would give you all kinds of details on it in a few seconds. It researches thousands of our articles, or it's already got, I don't know where and how it reaches out the databases that it looks at.
Well, look,
it's pretty amazing.
Last time we talked in the summer, you were talking about finding resources for your paper. You were working on a recent article you posted, and half of, you know, not some percentage, some 20% of the
some
references
of them made it up.
Were just bogus.
You're right. They're bogus because I ask it again to tell me where it found that cited article, and it says, I don't know. I give it
to
same thing
here.
It
We're
gave me back.
Yeah,
so
we're not gonna talk
yes,
about it. Keep moving.
Yes, but that's going to get better. It's going to get better in the future.
Well, it's going to get better at making it up and then write the paper. And
nah,
create the
I don't know
for
about
it.
I don't know. I don't see that was one part of 25 references that it gave me that were pretty accurate and I could find the papers.
Well, three of them you couldn't. And they were perfect titles. You're like, this would be a great paper if only it existed.
Yeah, right. So that, yeah, that's true. There's, you know, we've all it's been documented that this ChatGPT AI makes up stuff. But well, I think that it's going to get better.
No. The idea here, Kirk, is that it's a really good point, though, is you mentioned that you need to know a little bit about what you're searching for and how to search and how to interact with ChatGPT. It's the same with a book. Right. It's the same with a webinar or podcast, whatever. I go to YouTube to find something on my chainsaw and I know what I'm looking for. I know the terms and the model. I know the principles of how you shut down motors and stuff like that. But the issue is that you gotta it's sort of like investing, you know, you gotta get started. You gotta learn something to get it started. And it could be the old fashioned way with a mentor or the coach or your boss or whatever helps you learn stuff, or you're just curious and you go read it. But the real point I want to make is that as you're learning stuff, if it's my chainsaw and it still doesn't turn off like it's supposed to with the switch, then I know I didn't do it right. And I have to go back, hit another YouTube video or do something different.
Right.
Because I get the feedback right away. Whereas with design things or with code, you know, I think code is great because you try running it. If it works, you're in good shape. You know, if it doesn't work, then, you know, you did something wrong. You left a comma out somewhere or something like that. But it's the idea is that learning involves the verification step. Is this true? Is this really work? Does this solve my problem?
And
it's great to know the alphabet backwards, but I'm not going to check you on it because I don't really care.
But, you know, if you were asked what's the fit rate of this component to ChatGPT, you know, first thing is, why are you using fit? And failure of time, you know, per billion hours, how many components fail? And I'm thinking, you know, this is, again, there's so much misinformation. Misleading directions, I think, especially reliability prediction, which I hope everybody reads at the end of my show notes, always, in every one of them, I put a link to reliability prediction, a continued use of misleading approach, you know, and it's an approach. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
So, I want everybody to read that and why it's so difficult to predict the future. We don't know that it's difficult to predict the future, but yes, it is an electronic life for many things, not mechanics. Mechanics are easier, but for many things, it's always a special cause for the most part, very few, sometimes common cause in the design, but it's all very unique. I think that learning by actually going back, first thing, if you want to know how things and why things fail, study, you know, the warranty returns, the field failures, what really fails, what the cause.
Well, I take a step back and say, learn how to do failure analysis.
Right.
And what tools are
available.
Because if you never heard of an X-ray before, you need to see inside a package without taking it apart.
Right. If you've never seen delamination or, you know,
If you have, but you also need to know that X-ray is not good at finding delamination.
No,
but
ultrasound,
scanning acoustic microscopy.
Right.
Not easy.
Right. That shows a delamination in a package or internal.
But there's all these cool tools we got out there that part of it is being familiar with how can you extend your vision and touch and your own senses to get into stuff? There's non-destructive techniques and destructive techniques. Yet you can learn so much by doing a quality grade or really fine grade and cross-section and polishing. It's amazing what you can learn doing stuff like that.
And you got to do it. You got to get out of your office. You got to get out of your, go down to the lab, go down to the manufacturing line, go down to the failure analysis lab.
And then they won't let you back because you're down there breaking stuff just to see how it fails.
No, there's plenty of stuff already broken that you can look at and ask guys.
Well, they don't write down.
And the guys there in the failure analysis lab are not writing down everything. They just discover it, and you know they might report it again. And then they file it away. And once they leave the company, nobody knows about it.
Yep.
And it comes back.
Well, I was one that I had a lot of fun doing when I was at HP is we did a monthly webinar, and it was like every 6 months I invited one of the lab guys in the failure analysis lab.
Yeah.
And they had the greatest pictures and slides of stuff. And it was this is happening, and this is the story, and here's how we found it. And
look at this. Right.
Yeah. So that was a great way just to raise awareness of ways different things would fail.
Exactly. And seeing how things actually failed.
Oh, I also saw one last note, and we'll wrap this one up. Is I saw a note. It was on the starting story of Sesame Street, and they didn't. It was a total experiment. Can you teach kids through TV? You know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made the assumption that if we make it entertaining, you could actually teach kids, you know, colors and the names of animals and all kinds of stuff that Sesame Street. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of these is not like the others. You know, remember that when the jingle stuck in my head for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
But the idea was that somebody in the interview said, well, how did this change instruction? And they said, well, this kindergarten teacher came into the studio and was talking to us and said, whatever you're doing is working because kids are coming to kindergarten knowing their alphabet, knowing numbers and knowing, you know, colors and all kinds of stuff. And I have to redo all of my curriculum because up until your show, I had to start with blue is this and green is that and things like that. And she said, well, how do you do it? And they kind of looked at her like, well, we entertain and teach. He says, but I'm not an entertainer. And he said, well, it's a good way to teach.
Right. Well, as engineers, we make tools, and the tools are getting better, and we need to use those tools. And, you know, we can skip certain steps as we develop the better tools. But I think, you know, the basics of, I don't know, we all need to learn multiplication tables still when everybody has a phone that has a very high-level calculator in it. And, you know, the question is, where do we cut off that and start saying, okay, we can just jump this to now, because obviously the development of Sesame Street gave a at home runway for the kids to learn on their own. And I think at the same time, the internet is providing a lot of that capability. And for engineers listening to this, or, you know, new guys in the field of reliability, this is another place where it's an excellent place to learn all the different things, including, you know, maintenance engineering. Yeah. If you're in that site, I don't know that you do site reliability. That's the one field that you don't cover called reliability. And that's keeping data centers.
I don't know anybody. If anybody's listening to this and know a good person that wants to write or do podcasts and get on.
Yeah. You know, I'm always interested in that field.
Especially when the save button doesn't work on my article I'm putting up on
Nintendo. Or I can't access the Google Scholar or something, you know, whatever.
Got to fix that,
Right, and I know that they have a different set of issues in data centers, the guys trying to keep all the servers running, and maybe sometimes it's actual hardware failures. It would be interesting to hear from them. So, if you can find anybody that's a site reliability engineer, we'd love to hear.
So the summary of all this is, so what did you learn today? And let us know. But anything, it's, you know, what works for you? What's a good approach? You know, what's your go-to type stuff? I'm just curious about a bunch of that kind of stuff. And mostly so I can improve the site and if that's the way we want to go.
Right.
There's lots of ways. And so please get a hold of us. You can head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us there. Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So there's, you just learned four different ways to get a hold of us. Sorry. Just and please use it. Don't forget it.
And please ask questions and let us know what is the best way you found to learn reliability.
Yeah. Oh, we could do a whole another podcast just on that question. But anyway, thanks all so right. much, Kirk. We'll talk to you
again
soon.
Okay, we'll talk to you again, Brad.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.